It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. How are we doing today, Bill?
Hi, Howard. Very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, we're getting very topical this week because we're looking at the UK election, which is on the horizon, and how it will affect our finances. So, of course, Bill, 31st of October has been and gone without the UK leaving the EU, but the UK does now have a general election in December. So let's look at this, what this could mean for our finances. So firstly, Bill, how do markets usually react to an approaching general election? Can we expect the uncertainty to cause market volatility?
The one thing that the market always dislikes, of course, is uncertainty. Now, having said that, of course, we've lived through 3 years of uncertainty pretty much since the Brexit referendum was put to the UK voting public. And yet the markets during that period haven't done too badly at all. What I think we're facing now is this dilemma between whether or not Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, will get his majority that will then allow him to carry through the deal that he's agreed with the European Union, or perhaps an alternative deal. Who knows? There have been so many changes of direction during this process that it's almost impossible to predict exactly what will happen. But also now we've got strategic alliances between the Green Party, between Clare Comrie, and the Liberal Party, all quite motivated to get to a Remain position by one method or another, and choosing to not stand or stand in seats so that there is an opportunity to gain seats that look like they sit on the Remain side of the fence. We've got a very complicated message from the main opposition, the Labour Party, who tend to suggest that they would like to do one thing and then have another referendum, and it's a little confusing. But one way or the other, this election will cement the position for the next 5 years or so under the Fixed Term Parliament Act, if that isn't varied again. And the simple fact of the matter is that it will bring back a degree of certainty. Now, is that certainty going to be positive for the markets or negative? That is a difficult question to answer, honestly. And I'd prefer not to take a committed view on that right now. There is too many imponderables in the atmosphere. What I will say is that at Blevins Franks, of course, that we are not a political institution. Any comments I make about one side of the political spectrum or the other is entirely to do with how I personally view the economic position of the major parties, and not for any political purpose. I'm not intending to convince anybody to vote one way or the other. But we are looking at a time when I think the uncertainty of where we have been for the last few years is likely, in my opinion, to become more certain over the next few months. And as that time progresses, that growth in where we are likely to end up will eventually lead to more confidence in the markets. Whether that will mean the markets go ahead strongly, which has been often been the case in the past, post-election, when there is certainty, it's a difficult one, because we have to negotiate new trading terms with the European Union and other nations. If that agreement that Prime Minister Johnson has put in place comes to pass, and that itself may be a challenge to the economy of the United Kingdom. We shall see, Howard. I'm not sure quite where we are at the moment, but I would say if you are thinking about investment just right now, it's about acting with caution.
So, Bill, then, what is your advice to investors who may be wondering if they should buy or sell shares now?
I think that is a difference. I'm sorry to sit on the fence, Howard. You and our listeners will know that I don't often sit on the fence, but it is difficult to be certain which direction the markets will go in. I have a strong suspicion that if the economic policies being put forward by the current Chancellor of the Exchequer are contained and fulfilled through the manifesto into action, those promises will mean the markets could do pretty well. There's an enormous amount of public expenditure being proposed by both the Conservative Party and the Labour Party, and indeed even the Liberal Party are proposing very substantial public expenditure. Now, most of that public expenditure, of course, goes through the public markets. And as a consequence, very often when these huge spending programmes are introduced, the markets benefit from that influx of funding over the next few years as those promises are brought to fruition. So my gut instinct is that the markets will do pretty well over the next 2 or 3 years, simply because of the spending promises that both parties have made in an attempt to boost the UK economy, whilst it comes out of its relationship with the European Union and over the next 12, 24, 36 months, ends up with negotiations with other economies that will be able to supply goods and services to the UK and vice versa.
So let's move on to taxation, Bill. Can tax policy vary considerably depending on which party's in power?
It can. It can vary considerably. And we've seen some evidence already of the way in which the various parties have been proposing a variation in the current tax circumstances. We've got situations now where the Labour Party are proposing one route to taxation in the future to include things like wealth as part of an income tax regime, reducing the band which one enters into the higher rates of tax, even introducing a 50% rate of tax, the Labour Party. The Conservatives also have tax in their sights from inheritance tax, although they tend to be suggesting a relaxation of income tax. With the spending promises that have been made, there is no miracle in making promises to spend money on everything that may gain you a vote without funding that spending in a sensible way. And that has to come at the moment. Borrowing in the UK is at an extremely high level. New expenditure will have to come in large measure, I suspect, from increases in taxation, whichever party are elected at the general election.
So moving on to Spain, Bill, looking at income tax, for example, what should UK taxpayers be prepared for post-elections?
Well, as I say, the Prime Minister Boris Johnson's biggest move, I think, is moving the point for UK taxpayers at which the 40% income tax rate kicks in. He's going to move that from 50,000 to 80,000, which would give taxpayers in that bracket an additional £3,500 of net disposable income. It's going to affect, I think I read somewhere, about 4 million people. And it will increase, as I say, their net disposable income by somewhere between £2,500 and £3,000. Whilst Johnson has made this step in allowing more tax-free allowances for higher earners, the Labour Party manifesto seems to be taking a step in the other direction. The Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell, has made it clear that he wants to bring more people into the 45% tax bracket and to reduce the threshold from 150,000 to 80,000 for that purpose. And then he intends to, he says, introduce a 50% rate of tax for anyone earning over 123,000. That would, of course, raise billions for the UK economy. And the cost will, of course, fall onto the highest earners. That is not unsurprising.
Yeah. So what about inheritance tax and pensions?
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw inheritance tax recently described as the most hated tax in Britain. And that is probably because whether you have lived in a property that has simply accelerated in value faster than your inheritance tax allowances, and you now find yourself property rich and asset poor, you may end up with liabilities for inheritance tax through the increase and growth in the value of your property and other assets, much outside of your control. Whilst neither government over the last few years has done anything really radically to increase the allowances in line with property price inflation. There have been some tinkering at the edges, but it hasn't really hit the spot. Labour have pledged to scrap the current inheritance tax system altogether and instead to cap the amount that anyone can receive in inheritances throughout the whole of their lifetime to a maximum sum of £125,000. You can see how that might impact upon average property values being passed on to the next generation, average property values significantly higher than £125,000. And if you've had gifts from the deceased during your lifetime, they'd be totted up under this system, and then the asset passing to you at their death would be aggregated with your lifetime gifts, and you would pay tax above the level of £125,000. The Conservative Party have actually commissioned a report from the Office for Tax Simplification. They're going to carry out a review of the simplification of inheritance tax. And I think that's where most of the focus, if the Conservatives are re-elected, will be. They're talking about scrapping the system by which when you make a gift at the moment, the value for inheritance tax falls progressively after year four, three, and in stages down to the end of year seven. And if you're still alive, having made the gift 7 years earlier, that gift drops out of account and your clock starts again. They're going to talk about simplifying what is the annual gifting allowance, which is a very low number anyway, and looking in detail and trying to cut out other more complex allowances that don't really seem to do the trick. But I think inheritance tax, described as the most hated tax in Britain, is finding its way into the UK Exchequer as a very ready tool to raise very substantial sums of money. As the general wealth of the UK increases, as the property values of individuals who bought at times when there was no risk of paying inheritance tax on the value of their property, this is an area where I suspect billions of new tax revenue will be generated over the next 5, 10 and 15 years. Mm. It's an easy target.
Yeah. There have been newspaper reports about wealthy UK families and individuals preparing to leave the UK if there's a change in government. So what's your advice for any listeners who are currently UK resident but thinking of moving to Spain, and how early should they start looking at the tax implications and their tax planning?
Oh, it's a big question. There is no doubt. I mean, Blevins Franks operates from more than 2 dozen offices scattered around the popular areas of Europe, into which many British expatriates choose to spend their retirement and the rest of their lives. And there is no question that over the last 18 months or so, since it has become obvious that we are about to leave, well, not necessarily obvious, but now become obvious we are going to leave the European Union, and indeed that we may have a change of government, there has been a substantial increase in the number of inquiries that Blevins Franks has received, both from the UK for people planning to go and from people who are living in continental Europe and who want to know what their position will be after Brexit and what they might expect in relation to any tax changes that might be introduced in the UK that could impact upon them, income tax being one of them, inheritance tax might still be one of them if you're still a domicile of the UK. John McDonnell, the Shadow Chancellor, he did put the wind up everybody, I think, a couple of years ago when he said that Labour was preparing for a possible run on the pound if it won power. He's come back from that now. And he isn't actually stressing that the run of the pound will now happen. It could still happen. He isn't totally in control of currency exchange movements. Now, over the last 18 months or so, it's been pretty clear that some wealthy families have opened bank accounts in places like Portugal, Monaco, Malta, Spain, France, Cyprus. These places welcome the wealthy, and they have, generally speaking, got tax benefits for expatriates coming into their region. Now, if you take Portugal, Monaco, Malta as an example, for instance, they have speedy citizenship approval processes. They're not altogether solid, in my opinion, but nonetheless, they are an incentive to people who fear that they may become subject to higher taxation in the UK, whichever party is elected, with all of the spending promises and the revenue that's got to be raised to pay for them. They feel that they may be better off in a low-tax economy with an easy route to overseas citizenship. And the simple fact is, you know, that is almost certainly going to continue. I mean, that exodus by the wealthy came, I think, clearly into focus last year when it emerged that Sir Jim Ratcliffe, the founder of the global chemicals manufacturer INEOS, and he is indeed the UK's richest person, said he was moving to Monaco along with a couple of other billionaire INEOS directors. Now, obviously, I don't want to offend any billionaires, but that's an easy choice for you to make. But for the average wealthy, middle-rich individual, this is a time to consider whether or not, if you are contemplating living outside of the UK, to sit down and discuss and consider with a partner, a senior partner at Blevins Franks, how your circumstances and the tax benefits that you may benefit from in your new environment can be structured so that you... Look, tax isn't everything. But if you are going to go and live in an overseas country, you need to understand not just the taxation of the country you're going to, you need to understand the advantages that you can gain by leaving your country of origin in the first place, and then manage the interaction between those two regimes so that you come out of this with a much lower tax burden than you would otherwise have because you're not aware of the tax circumstances, perhaps in enough depth of the country you're going to live in. So pre-planning at the earliest stage and regular monitoring of the tax circumstances of the country you're going to and the one you're coming from will make a massive difference to your overall wealth and your long-term benefits in taking the move out of the UK as an expatriate to anywhere in continental Europe.
Yeah. So what are the key wealth management steps they should take to make sure their move to Spain is as beneficial as possible?
This business is about wealth management, Levin's Franks, but the truth is it's also about understanding human beings as far as you can. And the simple fact is, of course, that everything we talk about in terms of investment and tax is vital, it's important, but it's lifestyle choices that matter just as much. If you are planning to go and live in continental Europe, if you're planning to live in Spain, you need to look and research the areas of Spain that you feel are most suited to you. You need to test those areas out over a period of time. I've often recommended to people, don't buy immediately, maybe rent for a while, and you can walk out of a rented property. Buying a property is easy. Selling it isn't always so easy. And once you've established for sure the location in which you wish to live, in particular in Spain, because of the autonomous nature of the regions around Spain, we need to sit down with our clients who are contemplating relocating to Spain to discuss, how do we get your timing right in leaving the UK so that you don't trigger any unexpected or unnecessary tax burdens? How will we deal with your tax-exempt savings plans? How will we deal with other UK investments that are tax-favoured when you are about to relocate to Spain and they will no longer benefit from tax favour? They will become fully taxable in your new economy, but there are alternatives available that you may wish to consider so that you can relocate tax efficiency from the UK to even greater tax efficiency in Spain if you get the right advice. And it is therefore about getting your lifestyle choices right, considering your family, considering healthcare, considering all the various things that matter most to human beings, and as a final solid check to make sure that you reposition your wealth to reflect the fact that you're no longer a UK resident, you're a resident of Spain with different rights and responsibilities and liabilities, and that in those circumstances you reposition your wealth to minimise the overall tax burden on that wealth, within the law, on the right side of the fence, but of course in a situation where you end up with a greater net disposable income than you would have ended up had you not taken that advice in the first place.
So I suppose, Bill, to finish, these people would need specialist cross-border advice since they have to take into account the tax rules of both the UK and Spain.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly the point, Howard. That's the point I was trying to make. I'm sorry if I overloaded it, but the simple fact is there is a double tax treaty between Spain and the UK. The tax system of the UK and Spain is fundamentally different methods of calculating and charging individuals' income, capital gains, pensions, investments, all of them are subject to a very different regime of taxation in Spain. You can study it, and your existing UK advisor can probably give you advice at this point by reading one of our books or another book about Spanish taxation to get you off and running. But that UK advisor will not, generally speaking, keep up to date with the advice that you will need as time goes by and laws, tax regimes and all the rest of it change. You need to sit down with someone who understands both the UK system and the Spanish tax system and can bring together those two areas like a jigsaw so that they integrate cohesively and that you get the best result from your departure from the UK, if that's what you're planning to do, and your arrival in Spain without interruption. As I've said many times, Howard, whilst you can study it as an individual, you will pick up lots of stuff. But the most important stuff is very hidden within the tax legislation. And most lay people just don't know what they don't know. It's Blevins Frank's job to know what you don't know.
And I suppose your website is the best place to start.
I think if you go to www.blevinsfranks.com and you don't know of us as a business, you'll find in that website lots of background information, lots of historical information about how we have been advising expatriates for 40 years or more. And I'm sure that if you read some of the articles that are on that website, if you look at the individuals who represent us, all qualified, all regulated by the UK authority, you should inspire yourself with sufficient confidence to make arrangements to meet with one of the guys at Blevins Franks and sit down without any obligation and talk through what it is you're trying to achieve and let them tell you what they think they can do to help you get from where you are to where you wish to be.
Many thanks, Bill. Next week, for our listeners in Spain, I believe we're going to be talking about owning Spanish property inside a company.
Okay, how fine. Look forward to that.
Yes, likewise. Have a good week.
And you too, Howard. Take care.